blame Canada indeed on Dave's Gone By, except we're not going to blame Canada because I had a fabulous time, and I hope that my guest Perry Tannenbaum from Creative Loafing had as good a time as I did on the Canada trip. Perry, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Oh, great, great. How you doing? How you went somewhere even after Canada? Like, I just got to go home and veg and work. What'd you do?
We stayed over in Stratford, and
you and your lovely wife Sue.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then we drove over to the shore of Lake Huron and saw a couple towns there, drove up and down the coast, and
mm-hmm.
took a few photos, and came back and immersed ourselves in some car theater. We stayed over to see South Pacific because when I went to the festival back in 2003, I was just so impressed with their production of The King and I that I just had a feeling that this was also going to be very special.
Now, South Pacific was at the shore or the Strat?
That was at the Stratford.
Okay, and how was the South Pacific there? I didn't see it.
I think it was the best thing I saw there.
Oh, really?
Yes,
okay.
Indeed.
Go figure, I missed it. What was so? Why was this such a special? You know, we haven't had a South Pacific revival on Broadway in, I don't know if it's been done since the original on Broadway. And they're thinking of doing one in a season or two, finally. So what was so great about seeing it there?
Well, I like the fact that the production was just so full. It was a kind of bamboo motif that characterized every scene. And I thought the Nellie Forbush, particularly by Cynthia Dale, was very freshly imagined.
How was she different from, say, Mary Martin or whoever else did Nellie?
Well, I care.
Okay,
a real attempt to do a Little Rock accent, though it comes out as a kind
of... A Little Rock accent?
Little Rock.
Oh, Little Rock, okay, yeah.
Accent. So it comes out as a kind of generic Southern accent.
Mm-hmm.
And just fresh touches, like having the wash that man right out of my hair, choreographed in a shower with the girls splashing.
I like that.
I mean, I like that
a lot.
Just... It was just very creative, and when she sang She's in Love with a Wonderful Guy, she just kind of said, I'm the conventional winner, and she kind of shook her head a little bit, which is kind of what I like to point to that's special about what the Stratford does with the musicals. They really respect and deep think the books of these classic musicals and respect them as much as they respect the Shakespeare.
Well, she really
isn't a conventional dither, and it's the conventions she learned down in Little Rock, which causes her, to kind of temporarily alienate her affections from Emile Debeck. And then, you know, after thinking it over a little bit, saying, and seeing that he's risking his life, you know, kind of getting back into it. Whereas I feel sometimes, especially in the movie, that, if you're a traditional, you know, kind of rock-ribbed Protestant or something like that, you really wouldn't bend so quickly.
Hmm. Okay.
I get it this time around. There is a kind of wavering, and it's because just kind of temporarily the shock of seeing those kids puts her off.
Now, did you, was your favorite thing of all that you saw at both the Shaw Festival and the Stratford? No, what, Jeff, why you left? Oh.
Yeah, that was probably the favorite thing I saw altogether, but there were a lot of close runners-up, I would say.
I mean, I liked the Stratford's Oliver, too. Now, Oliver's another show. It was done about, 20 years ago. They revived it with Ron Moody on Broadway to get, he was basically the selling point. They got the same guy doing Fagin from the Carol Reed movie, and Peggy LuPone was in it. I didn't get to see it. But there was also talk of bringing, again, another Oliver to New York. That has not happened. So I was really happy to see a professional production of it. I was surprised at how quickly it moved. The show was just over 2 hours long.
Right.
Which I think the movie's 2 hours and 45 minutes. So they must have added in the movie. I liked Colm Feore as Fagin quite a bit. What did you think of him?
I thought he was a little PC for me. There was no ethnic sort of thing.
He wasn't Jewish enough.
He wasn't Jewish enough. There wasn't a kind of wily craftiness to him. He was doing it from the viewpoint of being a kind of pragmatic businessman. which I think is a valid interpretation, which I think he sells capably enough, but I think it takes some of the real flavor of the story away from it.
Well, he's a very sweet, and even more so than Ron Moody was. Ron Moody was a pretty lovable Fagin, but he's a very... Not only is it a business for him, but it's also he likes those kids. I mean, these are, as someone had overheard Fiore talking, or maybe it was in an interview, saying that one of the things that he was playing when he was doing Fagin is that Fagin is tremendously lonely. You know, he's an outcast, he's a Jew in that society, and he's a criminal in that society. So he's a double outcast, and he's not, doesn't have a wife, doesn't have a family, and he doesn't have kids. So these are all a surrogate family for him, and that's why he cares about these children so much.
I do think you get a very strong feeling in this, Oliver, that this is the first or the best father that Oliver has had up until this point by a significant margin. Yes, I'll agree with you there.
Now let's first of all, we jumped right into the plays, but you've been to the Shaw Niagara area before, right?
That's correct.
So it's a pretty neat little boutique-y sort of town. I know before I went, our program director here, Tom Ross, said, okay, if you're going to do anything in Niagara-on-the-Lake in that Shaw area, theater aside, you got to go to Greaves Jellies and Jams. which was basically, I think, his way of saying, if you're going and you don't bring me back some Greaves Jelly and Jam, you're fired. So I damn well did. But he was right. I mean, I don't like Jellies and Jams for the most part. But I went to that place, tried one, and my wife's been putting them in yogurt all week long, and it's just fabulous. It's just yummy, yummy. You can't get it in America, so I think you have to physically go over there or go to their website. But that's the kind of place that fills up Niagara-on-the-Lake, these little boutique-y shops and stuff. Do you have any favorites that you're into?
I think there's a leather shop called Leonardo's where I bought a leather jacket the last time that I still use, and
got
a better break on the Canadian currency that time around than there would be this time around.
Yeah, and the restaurants are kind of little on the pricey side for the most part.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I didn't go to the Chinese place. I assume they were more rational. There's a place called Fornos that had, basic, pretty half-decent American fare that was a more standard, price. But some of the things were like $25, $30 an entree, just a la carte. And I was like, oh, man.
That's because you got a bad exchange rate.
Yeah, well, yeah. The exchange rate used to be amazing. How long have you been coming to the Shaw Festival? Or Stratford?
This is my second time. I went up in 2003 for the first time.
What was the dollar for dollar back then, only 3 years ago? Was it like this?
No, I think it was like 75 Canadian...
To a dollar American, right? Or 75, something like that.
75 American to a dollar Canadian. Yeah.
I'm telling you, Canada struck oil.
Is that it?
I mean, mostly.
I mean, they don't need the euro. It's now literally a dollar to a dollar five. So anything you're getting there is the same exact money.
Right.
So, like, we ate...
I was out at a bed and breakfast where somebody said, let's just have a continental currency. Of course, the Mexicans want to get in on that scam.
Well, no, but, like, if you go to a restaurant, I guess, like, 5 years ago, if a Canadian restaurant charged $25 for a piece of fish... An American would tally that in his head and go, oh, well, it's $18, all right. Now it is $25 or something. It's a little weird to get used to that.
Imagine that. Canadian money is real.
Just barely.
Just barely. I think when I was young, many, many years ago, it was also, there was near parity back then. But it hasn't been, like I said, like you're saying, for decades like that at all.
And what did you think of the hotel? We stayed at the Princess of Wales. Or Prince of Wales.
Prince of Wales.
I make it female for Gay Friday.
Yeah. Soup to nuts. They've got it all covered. It's elegance personified.
It was funny. My wife and I, when we got there, we were told that the main part of the hotel was filled up, and that we had to go like across the street to a cottage. And I'm like, oh, great. What a wonderful way to start a trip, where they're kind of putting us off to the service area of everything. And then we open up the door of this quote-unquote cottage, and it's just like one of the nicest places we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Done up in... What was funny was we didn't really think much of it per se as far as the decor. We just thought it was really fancy looking. It had a little fake... It's a real working fireplace, except you don't have to put any wood in it. It just has, like, a switch that you flip, and there's fire. And the bathroom is, like, the size of the studio with a jacuzzi and a bidet. I don't know, what do you need a bidet for?
Cleanliness.
Someone explain why you can't just wipe.
Cleanliness.
So you take from the sink a little water, and you go between the cheeks, and
it just doesn't squirt up with that power.
Is that what it's all about?
Yeah, it's about cleanliness.
Is it an enema? Does it go into you?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, you know, you can point it wherever you want.
Well, yes, I imagine so. But it shoots very hard up your butt?
If you like, you can adjust pressure.
Yeah.
It's all about cleanliness.
I know, but then you still have to wipe because you're all wet.
Yeah, but you're not wet with,
No. Or pee, yeah, no. But then again,
if it goes
that high up, you're going to go to like your bed afterwards, and you're going to be leaking for an hour. It's just going to be dripping out of you little by little.
Why do people take enemas?
Oh, because they have to. You don't take an enema maybe you take an enema just for fun.
No.
Gay Pride Day, but the rest of us, you take an enema because you're blocked up.
She was into enemas.
What was that?
You didn't know you'd be lulled into the enema conversation, did you?
Enemas and I go way back. I'll explain that when I have more time sometime. But enemas are a very big thing with me. I'm you know, very excited about
them. Colonics.
High and low. No, but I'm just saying that.
Dallas was gorgeous. I mean, it was a beautiful place.
Yeah, but the reason I brought that up was we had in this cottage, like the side by side, so our next door neighbors, who were also members of the critics organization. You know, they looked in while we were coming in, and they were like, oh, my God, you got the whore room. Because it was all red like a bordello. I mean, like, the canopy, everything was, like, red.
Uh-huh.
And it was like the whore sex room. And I looked at, don't you guys have... They had this blue kind of very nautical themed, but also very, very nice. But, you know, I thought, oh, okay, they get... considering who they were, they got the semen room. And seriously. But anyway, how did we get on that topic?
You brought it up.
Because I brought it up, that's right.
Well, I will say that when we came back, like 5 days later, my wonderful wife, Sue, found this bread and breakfast kind of all the way around on...
Perry, can you talk a little louder or closer to the phone?
Oh, okay. My wonderful wife found this wonderful bread and breakfast on Simcoe Street that just had this incredible decor and served up some really nice gourmet breakfast on top of having art on display in the kitchen. So it was a kind of combination gallery, bed and breakfast, and there was like a reading room that was almost like a travel library.
Did you have any like special Canadian food, like back bacon? Or donuts, or any weird kind of Canadian.
Donuts are Canadian?
Well, if they're made in Canada, I guess they are.
Then all the food was there was Canadian.
Well, yes. Well, except the imported stuff. So, but did you have any Canadian real special kind of? I didn't, as far as I recall. I could have.
You have Canadian cuisine.
Yeah, no, there was one place that we had gone for breakfast on our last day, and it was like a sandwich and wrap shop, but a little sort of special, kind of a nookie kind of place. And they had this weird thing that was a mix of little bacon crumbles and egg and stuff, and I didn't get it. But I was...
That's called a Denver omelet.
No, it had, you know, more of a mushy thing in there. Gosh, aren't you glad you called in, Perry?
Yeah, I'm eggs again.
All right, let's get back to the theater then.
I want to hear about this.
What?
So, Perry, I don't know. I've never been on one of these conclaves. What exactly do you do? You get there, you get into your hotel, and what do you do?
I go to sleep.
Okay, and then you wake up. Well, Bear, you're a little boring for us.
there are these meetings, which are, you know...
Did you get the whore room, too, by the way?
Oh, my heavens. What?
Did you get a whore room, too?
No, I didn't get a whore room. That's this Edwardian deal.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Sense of elegance and
very beautiful
wallpaper and antique furniture. And
nice.
You were all right.
Okay, so you get up, you peel the wallpaper off the wall, and then what do you do?
You bang Sue a couple of times, and
hey,
then
we don't talk about that.
Okay.
We only talk about your sex life.
You rummage around, you eat a continental breakfast.
But when does the theater start? You're there on a theater conclave.
What's that?
You're there on a theater expedition.
Well,
yeah, then
you
have all this administrative gobbledygook from the organization itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then you have some guest speakers, some of whom are very interesting and actually say something illuminating about
who spoke?
The authors, the playwrights that we're going to see.
Well, Richard, not Richard Monet, the guy from the Shaw spoke at a lunch. He was very, very good.
Jackie Maxwell spoke at the festival.
Jackie Maxwell was at the Shaw, and then Simonetti from the Stratford also addressed us. I thought he was pretty good. I missed her thing, but he was talking about Coriolanus, and he didn't even do the joke about being a Coriol man with a Coriolanus, but...
Well, we'll send him to the bidet.
No, but I thought that was really good to hear from him about that show, where I'm not sure I agree with him, where he said it was as dark and as vicious and cynical as Shakespeare was ever going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Shakespeare, like, went to the limit on that play of showing the ugly side of human nature, and then he pulled back and went towards, magic realism and fables and kind of, spiritual stuff. And again, it went to Webster to go deeper and darker with the Duchess of Malfi. Shakespeare just couldn't go any further. Although, I don't know, I don't find Coriolanus any more rough than Titus Andronicus.
As a matter of fact, I find Coriolanus a kind of counterbalance to Julius Caesar in terms of Shakespeare being able to take both sides in the monarchy versus democracy argument.
Mm-hmm.
Coriolanus I find to be very anti-democratic, very much against the rabble,
mm-hmm.
and I find Julius Caesar to be very much in favor of grassroots politics.
Well, and Caesar was earlier, though, right?
What's that?
Caesar was earlier, though.
Correct. Coriolanus, as we were told, is the last of the tragedies before Shakespeare kind of closed the book on that sector of his output and went to the romances.
Maybe Shakespeare just fired the guy who was writing his tragedies at that point.
And by the
he hired a different guy. It was a much more humorous fella.
Couldn't get a guy to play Coriolanus.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Roles anymore. Yeah.
Now, how many sonnets did Shakespeare write?
Was it 38, 37, something like that?
154, I believe.
Oh gosh.
I thought it was 154.
Yeah, 154.
150. Holy crap! Yeah. He was busy.
Was it?
I always ask that question because the number of my house is 154, and that's when I learned it. It came up on Jeopardy one day. I said, oh, my God, I'm living the number of sonnets. Anyway.
But how many limericks did he do?
What?
How many limericks
did he do?
There was an old man from Stratford.
Right,
lived
yeah.
His life in,
anyway. I beg your pardon, yeah.
So tell me, what else? After you...
There was a Coriolanus.
No, wait. I just want to find out about this trip. So
okay.
you now do a couple of administrative things. You hear a couple of people talk. And do you go as a group, or do you have all these shows to choose from? How does that work?
Mostly, we're especially if you look back over the totality of all these conferences, the program and the theater selections that we're going to have are pretty much laid out. There's like maybe one option usually per trip. In this case, because we were doing a festival, you might think there would be less choice because we're not doing a whole bunch of companies. But in this case, with so much going on at the Shaw and at Stratford, there was actually more choice than usual.
Oh, that's good. So these shows will, like, open, they'll run for a couple of weeks, and local yokels will come in, and then, like, one week you come in, and there are, like, 300 theater critics in the audience?
Well,
that must be quite a daunting.
Well, this is not a local yokel kind of a place.
I know.
I'm just making a joke. No, but it's also there's a season. The season goes from about late April all the way to October.
Is like the entire audience filled with theater critics at one point?
No.
How many people?
I guess the closest it came to being that was when we were at the Courthouse Theater at the Shaw, which is the smallest of the venues that we were at. It's kind of a studio size, but
holds
maybe 300-400 people, and we were a crowd of maybe 70.
Yeah, our organization, the American Theater Critics, has somewhere between 200 and 300, close to 300 total members. They don't go. They don't all go on a tour.
How many people?
They go to the bathroom.
How many of us thought they could live in yours? How many people attended this?
About 100.
Okay, so
100 and that,
people.
That includes like a critic and your wife or your guest or something. So that's 100 total people. So if we go to some theaters, like where we would see in Stratford or Oliver, some of those theaters were several hundred seats. So we weren't the whole audience.
But you were 100 of them.
Anywhere from 50 to 100 of all of us, you know. Not, and again, we split up sometimes.
Did you ever ask the actors what that was like to know that there are like 100 theater critics in the audience?
Well, what actor doesn't go through that in New York on during press week or an opening night?
In New York, we're all critics.
Yeah. So I'm sure yeah.
Opening night, yeah, it's tough to get a press seat.
I mean, I you know, not to steal your thunder, Perry, but one of the things that at ATCA, the theater critics thing that we're used to, is any time we go anywhere and have a speech made to us, maybe it's an artistic director welcoming us to their theater, you know, during a pre-theater dinner, maybe it's the local Chamber of Commerce person, maybe like we all went to a local winery because we have travel writers and stuff like that, invariably we dread that moment when they start their speech and they go, boy, this is just what I love, having to make a speech in front of a bunch of theater critics. And then we all have to laugh and go, like, we've never heard that line before. Because it's the only line we ever hear. And they have to say it, and we have to hear it. It's part of the drill, you know?
It's a part of the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, speaking of part of the ritual, I got to do some ads. Perry, Jeff, you want to stick around for a little bit?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll do.
Okay, everybody, we'll be back with more Dave's Gone By right after these messages on Dave's Gone By on this Sunday night. We're here with my good friend Jeff Goodman of the Manhattan cable television show Two on the Isle, which he co-hosts with Charles Gross every other Friday. To find out more about that, go to MNN. Is it org or com, Jeff?
I don't know.
Google it. Manhattan Neighborhood Network.
Speaking of Googling it, can't you see it on Google or something?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Charlie has also started putting on video.google.com episodes. In fact, the first episode that he did was our Tony Prediction Show, where I was very happy to be a guest.
Where David is fabulous.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Thank you. But he's also going to be putting all the upcoming episodes on there. I think at a certain point you'll have to pay for them.
Because you know you can never get enough of me.
Oh, well, of course not. Jeff is worth every penny. So that's Manhattan Neighborhood Network.
And
Google
it's all
it
about
and go,
like a dollar, I think.
Well, yeah, that's all it is. And also on the line from South Carolina, critic Perry Tannenbaum. Perry, you still with us?
I'm still with you.
Yay! And we've been talking about...
And you're worth every penny, too, Perry.
Perry's worth every penny.
Right.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, okay. I see a lot of correct. The Creative Loafing actually comes out in Charlotte, North Carolina.
North Carolina. I can't get that straight. But you cover North and South for a couple of different
things,
right?
It's kind of like North Dakota's. Where are those presidential bases?
So actually, but do tell people where else you write for, Perry.
I also write for the Fort Mill Times down in South Carolina.
Okay.
I also write for Theater Mania, Backstage.com, and covering my performing arts beat, I also write for American Record Guide.
Cool. Hey, and don't you write for something called Total Theater?
TotalTheater.com? Total Theater, I've heard of them.
Yeah, thanks for not even thinking of that one. One of my sponsors, thank you so
much.
Well,
what do you want? He's bi-Carolinian.
By Carolee.
I've actually done
a couple of features, or will have done a couple of features in Stage Directions magazine of a more technical sort.
Ooh. Oh, cool. Actually, Iris Dorbian has been on the show a couple of times. She's the editor there.
Right.
So say hi to her.
Met her when we came up to New York. That's when we go up. We go up early in the year when Sue has her school vacation. But now that she's retired, we have a little more flexibility, and we might be able to get in when... ATCA has their little winter thing.
Yeah, it'll be in New York this year.
Yeah.
So that'll be cool. Let's get back to the theater, though. To some of the, we talked about the musicals a lot.
What shows did you see?
Yeah, what else? What other shows did you see and like?
What shows did you hate?
What shows did I hate? Oh, I would say tops on my hate list would be The Heiress and The Crucible.
Whoa, dude. I like them both.
Ooh, Dave has just shot back to the 60s.
Well, I mean, what was wrong with The Heiress?
The Heiress, I found the heroine much too good-looking.
Well,
okay. She's supposed to be difficult to marry. I didn't find the curve of her character from dumb and tongue-tied to smart and selfish to be quite as coherent as, let's say, the Cherry Jones version that I saw in...
Well, I mean, Cherry Jones is a well, I mean, she's gotten a little older, but she's cute. Do you find Cherry Jones too pretty to be...
And speaking of Kate Bronte, she's a lesbian.
Well, yes, she is. I'm very proud and open, and a bicyclist, too. So there you go.
Is
she's a bi-bicyclist. No,
probably with she rides without a
bicycle.
Seat.
Bicycle.
I got that without a seat thing. No, but I'm certain that is the question everybody was asking. Okay, did you see Cherry Jones, and therefore, how does this stack up?
Mm-hmm.
So, but you didn't find Cherry Jones?
I found Cherry Jones to be absolutely definitive.
Right. Okay. So do you think if we hadn't seen her, we would be more, you know, forgiving? I like the production, but...
No, I think the Michael Ball, in spite of the precedent of Philip Bosca, stood up quite well as the father.
Mm.
So I really...
Michael Ball, isn't it?
Is that a different Michael Ball from the
it's
guy who was...
a different Michael Ball, I've found.
Oh. Different, okay. Because I didn't see it mentioned in his bio.
How odd, there are two Michael Balls.
And they're each eunuchs. So, you know, I tell them that. Oh, no, that's not true.
This one isn't as stumpy as the other one. I'm sorry.
So what was the other one you hated? You didn't like Crucible. I mean, you can't... It's very hard to screw up Crucible. Why didn't you like it?
Which?
I didn't like the fact that they didn't include the afterthought scene between Abigail and John Proctor that Miller wrote. And which I've seen and gotten used to, and to me enriches the drama.
Okay.
And I didn't find any husband and wife chemistry at all. The last scene did not break my heart. I will say, however, I love the design.
And you love what?
The design of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I like the design of the show. There was a kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, Wheel of Fortune or... or maybe lottery type of motif going on there, but it had a nice spirit to it, and it really, I think, captured the whole thematic movement of it.
Okay. I mean, there was nothing, I have to say that of all the shows I saw 8 or 9 of them at the two venues. The ones we've just been talking about were at the Shaw Festival on Niagara, but also then going towards the Stratford, there was nothing I saw that I hated. I was bored a few times through stretches of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Well, pretty much any Shakespeare, that first act is going to be like a bit of a drudge sometimes. And Magic Fire, which my wife liked more than anything. Well, second most.
Who wrote Magic Fire?
Lillian Garrett Grogue. It's one of the only basically new plays that we saw the whole time. It's about Argentina during sort of their troubles of people disappearing a lot, and a family trying to ignore what's going on all around them, and literally within their own kitchen, and sort of making a deal, so to speak, with the devil, who's a friend of the family, that they're kind of protected, and just assuming...
It sort of straddled the area when Eva Perón died.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Magic Fire?
I actually liked it. True, she was trying to write a novel for the stage, but I thought she was doing it rather well and taking me to an area that I just love to explore, namely South America and some of the darkness of human nature down there.
So those are some of the things that we saw at the Shaw. Did you get to Toronto and Lord of the Rings?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
Oh,
you
did you
sat
see that
Lord of the Rings. Oh, yeah.
How'd you like it?
2-hour trip to get to Toronto. Let me put it this way. At the end of the first act, I wanted to shoot myself.
Really?
It was only an hour long. I was like, oh, my God, I cannot get into this. I'm so endlessly boring. The visuals are amazing.
It is an eye-popping spectacle.
Can you describe
if you're into Lord of the Rings and Tolkien a lot more deeply than we are, our opinions might be taken with a grain of salt, but I couldn't follow it.
Well, no, but what happened for me was, at the end of the first act, a couple of the other critics were saying, okay, we're going to skip this and we're going to go to the CN Tower and have dinner, which is like the big, tall, mm-hmm. their version of the Sky Needle in Toronto. And I walked outside and said, do I join them? Do I not? It started to rain a little bit. I walked around the block and I said, no, I'm going to go in. And, you know, I paid. It was one of the few things we actually had to pay for that wasn't included in our basic conference fee. Let me go. You know, it's a big thing.
I don't ever believe in first acting, just leaving it for the first act.
Oh, if I despise something, I didn't. Well, the first 10 years I was reviewing.
Well, you just sit there because it could get better.
And a lot of times, but it never gets that better. Sometimes it gets better.
Well, especially if you're reviewing a show, I really feel strongly about that.
Well, I went
back.
That
if you leave, good. But
and it got better. And I was.
But shame on the other critics for not going to see both.
Oh no, maybe like four or five left. Everybody else stuck. Well, we paid for it.
I think setups in general can be very dreary and very difficult to do, and not everyone does it well. And when you're taking somebody else's work that has just such a loyal following and trying to just get the machinery cranked up. It can be difficult, dreary, and boring.
And they say that now that the show is going to be booked for London as well, they're going to do more work on it. They're going to, you know, liven it up a little bit, maybe cut it down a little bit. Because they're saying,
How long is it?
It's 3.5 hours.
And the first act is only 1 hour?
Yeah, there's two intermissions.
Oh, okay.
So, there's more action. I didn't find it so hard to follow. And I did not read the books. I read The Hobbit, but I've never read The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. So the one thing that everybody was complaining about, that the story wasn't that clear, was not a problem for me. I found the story clear. Mm-hmm. I just took a long time for me to give a crap. I liked the Gollum, though. He was darn good.
Gollum was good.
I want me precious! Again and again and again. That's the thing, the whole story again and again. Who's got the ring? Oh, the ring turns
Gollum
nasty. Yeah.
Children's theater thing down here, so I have a special affection for Gollum.
We have a couple
speaking
more,
of
yeah.
down there, what is your theater like down in North Carolina?
Cool.
North Carolina.
It's kind of in a down mode since the Charlotte Rep folded here. But we've had a new infusion of life with the children's theater, because they built this wonderful facility uptown called Imagineon, which is this pioneering collaboration between very classy theater organization and the main branch of the public library, particularly the children's section of it. So there's really some exciting synergies going on, and they've always been the best technical theater in town, and now they have a facility that actually is built as a theater, so things are really taking off there.
Wonderful. But Charlotte Rep closed. That's
Charlotte Rep
really?
Closed down.
Well,
yeah, that's kind of surprising.
Yes.
You could write to Warren Buffett. I hear he's giving away millions.
Did you hear that? His thing.
If you form a non-profit organization, you can apply to Warren Buffett. He's giving away all his money.
Mm-hmm. So, not a bad idea.
I think Warren Buffett...
I'll like him.
Should give all his money to theater.
Because writing for Dave is definitely non-profit. So,
hey, thanks. Thanks a lot, Barry.
Well, that's why you're writing. Dave, you have to pay people.
Oh, we just have a couple more minutes, and I want to get to a couple more things at the Stratford, and then I want to talk about our dinner at the Belfry. Because we got to mention that.
Were the bats there?
There were bats with the pricing of that place, I'll tell you. Why don't we just talk about that? You remember this. There's a restaurant. I don't know why people don't find this sacrilege, but there's a restaurant in Stratford.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Stratford is a more interesting town to me than Niagara-on-the-Lake. It's got more shops and stuff. It's a little closer to something like Cedarhurst, whereas not quite as preciously boutiquey. There's a lot more variety of things to do. But you still get your seriously, like, expensive restaurants. And this one, we passed it a couple of times. I didn't even realize the damn thing was a restaurant, because it's an old church. And it's really beautiful, like, serious-looking church with stained glass and the spires. Mm-hmm. It's a bloody restaurant now.
Well, they made one into a disco in Manhattan.
I know, the Limelight. There's just something weird wrong about that. You know? I think.
It's just
right from Manhattan, but it's wrong for everywhere else.
Wrong for everywhere else. So we go to this place. It's called the Belfry. And we get the menus. And you want to talk about the Belfry a little bit, Perry?
Well, first of all, you have to realize that the church is like the main restaurant, and it has like five different categories of items on its menu. And the night we went, it was absolutely, you know, the pews were full, let's put it that way.
Packed top to bottom.
And upstairs, you go into this kind of smaller reception room called the Belfry, which has a similar menu, but an abbreviated one, with not quite as many tiers of pricing. And it's designed as a kind of tasting menu.
Yeah, they call it a tapas style, except all the appetizers and entrees are priced like freaking like $20-$25 entrees. Who has the money to do tapas style, you know, and then they bring
you... Well, that's when Canada had no money. They were pricing at the old Canada rate.
I guess. Jeepers, creeps. I mean, it was very funny. We were there with the editor of Backstage, who's a lot more sort of outspoken and in your face than we are. And they finally brought out her entree. And she looked at it.
We're talking about Sherry, right?
Yeah, yeah. Our friend Sherry Eaker.
Uh-huh.
Someone fairly well known in New York circles.
And you all love her.
She just looked at her plate and she said, "You've got to be kidding." And you have to notice, this woman is as thin as a rail. She, you know, I've seen her eat like a bird. And they bring her, like, a dot on her plate. She's like, "Where's my food?" It took them half an hour to bring out her salad. And it was like four pieces of lettuce on three tomatoes. And, oh, you can see why it took them that long to make it.
They had to grow it first.
It was such a, oh, my God. What a stupid place. And, like, $8.50 for a bottle of, you know, they don't come with regular water. They bring over without asking you, you know, the sparkling water, Geralcimo or one of those things.
And tell them tap. You want Le Tap.
Yeah, Le Tap, which was not $8.50 a bottle. Jesus H. Anyway, Perry,
I had to
I'm
tell Perry that her dinner was cute.
Yeah, mine was pretty good. How was yours?
It was very tasty. I think I lucked out in terms of buying, A, ordering the lamb, and B, having the foresight to do two appetizers. And the second one,
the fries
French
were good.
Fries,
yeah.
Were, excuse me, pommes frites.
Pommes frites, yeah. But those were reasonable. $6 for French fries in a place like that is reasonable.
Mon Dieu.
All right, Perry, I've got to wrap this up. So tell us, what are you going to next? What are you going to be seeing?
What am I going to be seeing? I just saw Parade up at the Central Piedmont Community College, and I saw came back from Greensboro, where I saw a marvelous production of The Matchmaker.
Oh, that's nice. And what
I'll be reviewing those for Backstage.com.
Terrific. And what do you plan on seeing in the near future?
The near future? Oh, my gosh. The next thing that comes up here is probably, let me take a look at my calendar. There's just not very much in the next few weeks. I'm going to have to probably leave town to get something. But we actually have a kind of festival, which is called What the Festival, with a lot of unprintable typographical signs to describe it. And among the things that are going to be doing there the last 5 years... True West, and then they call it Attack of the 24-Hour Play Festival, in which six playwrights, and they wrote me into doing this as well, are given 12 hours to write a 10-minute play, given a set of prompts.
They do that in New York, too, I believe.
Right.
Or something
and
like
then
or subway
the second 12 hours is devoted to producing the play.
Yeah,
cool. Well, Perry, I've got to wrap this up real quick, but I want to thank you so much for being such a cool guest and for sharing our mutual Canadian experiences. And I want to wish you best and best to Sue as well, because she's really neat.
Well, I'll give it your regards. She's probably listening in.
Well, I should hope so. I wouldn't have had you on if she wasn't, for gosh sake.
I know that. So you take care of yourself.
You've doubled our listenership.
Enjoyed it.
Exactly. Thank you, Pear. I'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back with more of Days Gone By.